They have arrived, and we have arrived, at Popcorn Talk for Sci-Fi Weekly. We're talking about the new film, Arrival. We're going to give a spoiler-free review, followed by a spoiler-filled review, and also all the news from this week on today's Sci-Fi Weekly.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Sci-Fi Weekly.
Hey guys, welcome back to Sci-Fi Weekly. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. I'm so excited to talk about the movie that we're talking about today.
Sure, sure.
It's Arrival. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to Popcorn Talk on Popcorn Talk Network on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Sci-Fi Weekly itself on Twitter and Facebook at Sci-Fi Weekly. You can follow me at That Zach Wilson. You can find my co-host, Jesse Klein.
Hey,
who's back this week.
What's up, everyone? Nice to be back from the Pacific Northwest. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. I want to talk about all the Arrival.
Oh my God. This movie melted my brain.
Yeah.
In all the right ways. Oh my God. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, after we get through some of the headlines from this week, we're going to talk about the Valerian trailer that came out.
It looks so cool.
Science might be in danger in real life.
Yep.
So, like, not fiction, but we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to get into Arrival.
I'm very excited.
Check it below the link. If you're joining us and you just want to jump to Arrival, after we're done, we'll make sure that we put in a time code that you can just click on and jump right to Arrival.
That's so convenient.
Yeah, it's so helpful. All right, so without further ado, we got to get through the headlines first. Let's jump right into Ludicrous Speed.
Ludicrous Speed, go!
What happened to Ludicrous Speed?
I don't know, the music apparently stopped.
I think it's the green button.
Oh.
Captain,
Ludicrous
computer.
Speed!
There we go.
Go!
Oh, there it is.
Boy. All right. Transformers Bumblebee. We'll be getting a spin-off movie. I didn't believe it either.
Yeah.
But I've heard that it's going to be a gritty character drama. A haunting story of a scientist / giant robot / Camaro who studies the effects of colony collapse on the environment.
Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Is Bumblebee.
Think about it. Just give it a second.
Rumors leaked out this week. In the wake of Apocalypse, Fox is looking into completely rebooting the X-Men universe. And to that, I say, in the wake of the recent election, we are also looking into rebooting this universe.
Get to work on it, Fox.
Yeah. Please, Fox.
We got the official title for Pacific Rim 2.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Pacific Rim Maelstrom. A maelstrom is defined in the dictionary as a powerful whirlpool in a sea or river. I first heard Maelstrom, which I would also like to see that movie, which would feature the last defense against the kaiju, and they're just the men and women of the U.S. Postal Service. This fall, nothing can stop their delivery. Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor winged fury of a kaiju smackdown.
This package is for destruction.
I'd watch it.
Speaking of giant monsters, we got our first look at King Kong from Skull Island. Let's take a look at him. I heard that he has a line in this movie, and he just says, "For Harambe."
He goes over to, was it Cincinnati?
Yeah.
And he just like starts wailing,
starts
on
smashing
the place.
Yeah.
He's like, "I don't care about Skull Island." Oh man. Three new Stranger Things characters were added to the cast this week.
Awesome.
Including Paul Reiser, who's going to be playing a member of the Department of Energy.
Great.
And Sean Astin, who is, and I'm quoting the character description here, a kind-hearted former nerd who went to high school with Joyce and Hopper and now manages a local Radio Shack. So we're sending Sean Astin back to the 80s, and I'm just asking, how is the truffle shuffle going to be used to defeat the Demogorgon?
A lot of people are asking, what's a Radio Shack?
No, now it just means sprint.
Yeah. Some reports have surfaced that Deadpool 3 is already in early development, and Fox, and the goal is to make it into an X-Force movie. You know, that sounds awesome, but didn't we just have a story about how the X-Men universe is getting rebooted? And didn't the director and the composer of both just quit the project? Let's just take a second and chill out, Fox, okay? Let's take a Wolverine-less breath, maybe an Iceman-style chills, and slow down like, you know, the opposite of Quicksilver.
I feel like you're...
I don't have any, like, mutant-themed, like, slow down and chill out things anymore.
All right, we're out. So okay. let's go over to other Marvel news.
Yeah, sure.
Tom Holland revealed that his contract allows for 6 more appearances as Spider-Man.
Okay.
Total. That's going to be 3 solo movies. So we're going to get at least a trilogy out of this iteration of Peter Parker.
He's going to be 40 by the end of the last movie.
Well, they'll pump him out faster but he's also going to be in 3 other MCU films.
Yeah.
Now, I would speculate he's probably going to be in at least one, if not both, of the new Avengers. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily new Avengers, but the new Avengers movies.
The upcoming Avengers movies.
Yes, thank you. The upcoming 2 Avengers projects.
The ultimate Avengers, no.
But what I'd love to see is a throwdown between Ant-Man, Wasp, Black Widow, and Spider-Man. Just an all, no holds barred bug off.
Yeah, sure.
MCU bug off.
They'll lose to a giant fly zapper.
Oh. All right, that's going to do it for Ludicrous Speed. Thank you guys so much for bearing with us. All right, so the big news that everyone was talking about this week, besides just Arrival itself.
Yeah.
Valerian dropped the trailer. This came out of complete nowhere to me.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of this as a book.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't know that this movie was being made.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks awesome.
Yeah. So I read a few of the books that it's based off of in French. Thank you very much. It's perfect for Luc Besson, who is kind of obsessed with, like, strong female characters. And it starts off kind of, like, without any spoilers, but it starts off with the main character being, like, a stereotypical, like, prince in shining armor kind of guy. And he's got, like, the sidekick, and she's kind of not that big a deal. And as the books continue, you find out that she is, like, much more of a badass than he is, and like way more cool, and like has better powers and all that stuff. So it'll be really fun to see. It's like perfect for Luc Besson because it's his type of show.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it. Like, why don't we check out the trailer?
Please do.
We'll talk about it as we watch it. It looks,
I mean,
like, I've watched it 3-4 times today alone. Like, the music
is perfect.
Because I've never read the book, so like, yeah. Coming at this from different angles, like, I don't know what I'm looking at. Like, I see, like, there's obviously lots of alien creatures, and, like, of course it's from this guy.
Yeah.
Like, but this is, like, what the Fifth Element looked like with a budget.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, just the character design, like, right in those 2 shots, especially. Yeah.
And just, like, all of the technology looks kind of like what our technology looks like, but if you aged it a few million years. I smile.
Yeah, we're a team.
Like that's a Fifth Element move right there.
Yeah. I love, like, we see these creatures that they look almost like they're primitives, but they have, like, tech on them.
Yeah.
So, like, it's clear that we're dealing with, like, people of, like, there's so many different aliens, they must come from different levels of technology, but they've all been brought together.
Yeah.
This is all, like, this is, we're looking at, if you're listening, we're looking at the scene where he's shooting, like, a gun at the air.
Yeah,
and
he's
then
got a platform gun.
Building platform. And also, is that Rihanna?
Yeah, I think that was Rihanna.
Like, this is the kind of trailer that I like, because by the end of this,
yeah,
I don't know what it's about.
But you're excited.
In the best way. Like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm intrigued enough by what I've been shown. Like, I get the idea of, like, who I'm going to be following, but I don't know who they are. I can watch that in the movie.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'm a big fan of Luc Besson, and even his worst films, like Aeon Flux, like, even those films, he is fantastic at world building and, like, making worlds that make sense within the world he's creating. Like, he's great at developing rules. And like develop, and his team is really good at developing just a sense of this all makes sense. Like, you know, when you see The Fifth Element and you go like to the airport and there's just a wall of trash there, you can see like, oh, that fits within this world that we've seen.
Yeah.
And like it I'm very excited for this. I liked the books when I was a kid, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie.
Yeah. No, they got my ticket from that trailer. That's like from that perspective, that's the takeaway.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get into Arrival, I want to talk about like some sci-fi in real life.
Yeah.
But this isn't good sci-fi. This is like usually sci-fi in real life. We're talking about like, oh, we made this crazy advance. We discovered a new thing on Mars.
Aliens? Like,
yeah.
Like that's a lot of our sci-fi in real life is just like aliens.
It is a theme. It is a theme. That and travel to Mars.
Yeah.
Travel to Mars. We got some stuff this week. Like,
yeah.
Look, we can't ignore it completely. Like, we can't ignore the election.
Despite your political beliefs or whatever, the election happened, and the president-elect, Donald Trump, has a very... A lot of what he believes in is bringing jobs back to the United States, specifically manufacturing jobs, and taking away a lot of alternative energy resources and alternative energy jobs. And he brought someone into his cabinet to head up all of that environmental stuff.
These two things are not official. Like there's a couple of different appointments and
everyone has to go through,
but the strong rumor, and we wanted to talk about this week because I feel like it's important to acknowledge it especially before it happens.
Yeah.
Because maybe if nothing else, making people aware of it can help stop it.
Yeah.
But there's two appointments that we look like might go through, and one of them is the potential head of the EPA.
Yes.
The Environmental Protection Agency might get handed over to a guy named Myron Ebell,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't believe in global warming or doesn't care, because basically he believes that there should be no regulations to prevent climate change. Like climate change should not affect how we regulate businesses, or there should be no emission standards, things like that. This is the person in charge of
protecting the environment.
Protecting the environment.
Yeah.
And that's how you get to all these science fiction futures where, like, we talked about the film on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
A few weeks ago, like a month ago. I can't remember the name. Yeah. Either way.
It was a good film.
But you've seen it in a number of different science fictions where you can't go outside without a breather.
Yeah.
Is usually what they're called. Like, basically without a gas mask.
Yeah.
And that's how we get there.
Or without protection from the sun.
Yeah. Because the ozone has been completely eaten away. This is how it starts.
Yes.
We're looking at science fiction playing out in real life, but not the idealistic version.
Putting the people in charge who have like a way to benefit from going away, like from the thing that they're trying to protect, is not the best thing to do.
Yeah. And you can say, well, it's only going to be 4 years. Like, how much damage can we do in 4 years? But to the next one, part of how we can prevent it in the future is by educating people and teaching them science from where they're starting.
And I'm friends with a scientist, a climatologist at JPL, and basically he said, we already did irreparable damage during the Bush years, and now it's kind of... Right now, Earth is in triage. Like, climatologists are freaking out right now. and we're in triage right now, and it's trying to figure out how you can save the environment. It'll never go back to the way it was before.
Yeah.
And it's now, like, how to save it as and not get worse.
Yeah.
And if you don't put regulations on emissions, it'll get worse.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we are. But if we can teach our kids, hopefully,
yeah,
we turn around. Except that it looks like Ben Carson is up to head the Department of Education.
Yes.
Ben Carson is somebody who has publicly stated that he doesn't believe in evolution.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that if you do believe in evolution, you are biased. So not only doesn't believe in it himself, but believes it is wrong to believe in it.
Yes.
In general. There's a guy who, there's nothing wrong with believing in a power beyond us who had a hand in things.
No.
It's when you ignore the science that we've studied about it, and then especially when you press that as a educational curriculum.
Yes. And
that we have a problem.
To present religion as science is the dangerous part. When they say you should teach creationism along with evolution, that makes a false equivalency.
Yeah. And that's what he's basically preaching.
Yeah, which, again, like, in all of our science fiction movies where, like, the future is screwed up, a lot of the reason why it is because education was terrible and people became working class. The masses became more working class instead of, you know, intelligentsia.
Yeah.
Not the coffee place.
but we say this as a, partially as a warning, if you will, partially as a...
Awareness.
Yeah, like, write to your legislative representative, to your local representative. Call them on the phone, which is the best way for them to actually get involved, because letters and emails get ignored. Call them to express how much this is not okay.
Yeah, if you don't agree with it. If you do, then... just sit with it then. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. We all just have to work together.
Yeah.
To make sure that, like, whatever your economic policies are, whatever, like, science.
This is the earth.
This is science. And, like, we are doing.
Like, we're talking
we're
about.
It the wrong way.
We're talking about the future of planet Earth.
Yeah.
If the environmental policies go back, if we back out of the Paris Accords, like, there's going to be massive repercussions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That small rant aside.
Yep.
And done with. Let's jump into Arrival.
Okay, let's do it.
Oh. Oh.
Spoiler free right now. Spoiler free.
Yeah. So first things first, Jesse, no spoilers for at first. What are your thoughts on Arrival?
Loved it. Hard sci-fi movie, a big story, but surrounding a small group of people. You don't get everything explained to you. You just kind of are there to experience the science fiction of it. The protagonists are all scientists. There's great technology. There's great, like, science moments. You see aliens. You see all this stuff. It's all...
It is hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
At its finest on screen. Like, if I'm going to rate this... It's a 9.99 repeating out of 10.
I have an 8. I have an 8 out of 10. But we'll get into the
specifics of why we're each rating it that. Because I know we talked a little bit before, some spoilers I know in your reasoning.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say that right now. But for me, this was just, I sat there after the film ended and was just, I was floored by this movie.
Yeah.
This is, for me at least, I think the best science fiction film that I've seen since District 9.
Yeah,
which I'll agree I've with held that. In my top 10 movies since I saw it.
I'll agree with
so that.
So that
is for me about as high praise as I can give.
Yeah, I there might be one that's slipping from my brain, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, not to say that there weren't other good ones, but District 9 I hold as a high pedigree of sci-fi.
Yeah.
And this matched it.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
If not surpassed it.
Yeah. If you are a science fiction fan, You will not be disappointed by this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was directed by Denis Villeneuve, who mm-hmm. most recently did Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
Is also in line to do Blade Runner 2049,
yep.
which now I implicitly trust him with.
Yeah, for sure.
I can only think that the producers for Blade Runner like saw an early cut of this.
And we're like, we should hire this guy.
Yeah, get that guy.
Yeah.
It's based on a short story, mm-hmm. Which I haven't had a chance to read, but I like put it on my list of like, I want to read that.
Yeah.
Like if I had time in the day, like I saw it yesterday.
Yeah.
I would have tried to read it. But all right. So do you have any other spoiler-free thoughts? It's tough.
I know. It's really difficult to think of what's a spoiler and what's not.
So in the interest of not ruining this for anyone.
Yeah.
We're going to throw a big old spoiler wall right here. If you're still listening and you have not seen this movie, you have been fairly warned that all of what we're going to see, like the whole movie is at play here.
Yeah.
Basically.
Everything, including the big twist, all of it.
Yeah. Oh my God. The ending was so, it blew me away, but let's start with the characters.
Sure.
No, let's talk about the ending.
Okay, let's talk about
the ending. I can't contain
myself. Okay, yeah.
All right. So, like, just why I loved this movie was that I was in for I thought this movie was going to be just a sort of, like, hard science fiction. Like, we're going to see her trying to communicate with these alien creatures. And
yeah.
It's tough to communicate, and maybe things get miscommunicated, and that leads to war or, like, faction infighting. Like, some of what we saw. I never expected the poetic, like, storytelling aspect of this.
Yeah.
Playing with time the way they did, and the use of what we were treating as flashbacks.
Yeah.
The way it was so intricately woven. I didn't pick... I think I got it a little bit earlier than the person I saw it with, but, like, not too early at all.
Yeah.
You had a different experience.
Yeah, I paid attention to the wedding rings, which is a real bummer, because I realized that it was a flash forward, not a flashback, pretty early on. And, I mean, I'm a big Kurt Vonnegut fan, and I've read a lot about Sapper Whorf, so, like, I'm very kind of aware of that world. So, like, maybe the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh, their language controls time. This is about time being, it's a time burrito. It all folds together. There's no beginning or end.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of like of playing with time recently. Like Doctor Strange a week ago was very built in that, like, what can you do? How does time affect things?
Yeah.
And like dimensions that don't exist in time. Interstellar.
Yeah.
A few years ago, dealt with a very similar thing of like stepping outside of space time.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating concept to just play with. For me, like I didn't pick up on it until she said that her husband was a scientist.
Yeah.
That was my first, like, it was too specific of a detail to be meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, she's got a type. She likes scientists. Like, it was clear that she and Jeremy Renner were connecting.
Yeah.
Not overly so. Not like, oh, it's a rom-com. But,
yeah,
like, that they were connecting. And the fact that her husband, what we thought was her like ex-husband from before, was a scientist, like that's too close.
Yeah, and the, like the zero-sum game moment,
yeah,
and like all that kind of
stuff. That was my first hint.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to all the themes and stuff in a moment. But
sure.
Let's talk about the characters real quick. It's like Luis.
Yeah.
Played by Amy Adams, a strong female protagonist who, as you were saying, is a scientist.
Yeah.
So this is like, she's not an action hero. She never does any action hero things in the movie. And that's what I really appreciated about her.
I mean, her most action-y moment is she steals a phone.
Yeah. Like,
that is her most action-intense moment. She steals an FBI agent's phone.
But you don't see scientists treated like this on film. And that's what I really appreciated about it, is that they really gave her room to play a linguist.
And Jeremy Renner, they both were kind of given, like, you saw the military kind of like, we need you.
Yeah.
Like, we need, yeah.
And yeah, Jeremy Renner as Ian. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
This is a guy who you expected to, like,
be action man.
Yeah. Like, he reads, like, he's, like, stereotypically cast, or typecast, rather, is the word I'm looking for.
Mission Impossible,
Hawkeye. Yeah, like, you expected him.
The Bourne, whatever, story.
To be honest, in the entire time watching it, and this is a big thing for me, I never once had a moment of Hawkeye.
No.
I didn't even think about it.
No, they introduced him really well, where they're on the helicopter, and he's, like, trying to talk to her, but she doesn't have the headphones in. And he's just quoting her book to him.
Such a nice meet cute.
Yeah, like again, like, but he was, like, really awkward and not Hawkeye at all.
No, and he does a good job. Like, he is clearly Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
But the differences are subtle to where, like, I buy him as a physicist.
Yes.
I buy him as somebody who's going to partner with her and, like, believes in, like, this peaceful approach.
Well, they gave him glasses.
Forest Whitaker, as, like, sort of, like, the third lead.
Yeah.
Like, other people, like Joaquin Phoenix popped up, and he was fine. Like, he didn't have a lot to do, but he was good.
Yeah.
Forest Whitaker.
I really liked Forest Whitaker as, like, this guy split between the two worlds. Like, he has to obey orders, but at the same time, he wants these scientists to, you know, do their job and succeed. And so it was. I think he did a really nice, subtle performance.
Yeah. So let's get into some of the themes of the movie. Or should we do the science first?
Let's do.
There's so much to talk about.
Let's do science.
Okay. Let's get into the science. So basically, the alien ship shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Because science, we also talk about sociopolitical stuff in this. Well, the science, these giant black pillars show up, and we've seen this on different, like, every alien movie has that moment of, like,
arrival,
people reacting.
Yeah.
And I like the opening with her sort of walking
at school,
through. And not like, I was like, oh, you idiots, like, what celebrity death are we?
Yeah.
Like, all crowding around the TV for now. There's no one in her class.
There's no one in her class. Can you turn it on to the TV?
Can we put the news on?
Yeah, I mean, I think they really handled the world, the Earth, I think, worked the way our Earth works pretty.
Yeah.
Like, there were riots, there were people who were going to go worship the aliens, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the aliens themselves, I don't know about you, but I was like, are they bad guys? I wasn't sure until they told us. Until, like, the moment we were told that they're not bad guys,
or
there to harvest us or whatever, I wasn't sure.
I didn't think, like, I don't think there were any moments where I really thought that they were bad.
Yeah.
It didn't read to me, because, like, the logic of, like, why are they bothering to, like, have communication and all this, the only reason that they could be bad after dealing with all that would be if it was a scientific envoy deciding whether or not they were going to cull us.
Well, that, or they talked about how, like, when Europeans were colonizing, they would turn tribes against each other and weaken the main tribe.
That's true.
And so, and, like, I thought that was a very valid kind of, I mean, that's what we did in America. It's what they did in South America and in the Caribbean. Like, they turn tribes against each other. In the promise of more resources, and then just took out whoever won against all those tribes.
Yeah.
But I thought the design was really cool, and I thought that the fact that the aliens had zero design,
the creature design,
like the creature design, but also, like, the inside of the ship had zero personality.
Yeah.
There was nothing that denoted character or, like, culture or anything. Like, it had zero personality. It was just a blank room.
Do you think that makes sense for creatures? I guess it does for creatures that live outside of space-time. Like, you wouldn't need a, like, you wouldn't, I don't know that, that, like, art necessarily is a part of your being. If you take, I don't know, I guess, well, here's, that's an interesting concept. Like,
yeah.
How much of what we, like, we have art as partially a, see, a lot of art is a need to express, a need to escape, or a need to, like.
I feel like if you could see your own death, you would need art more, and you would create art more. If, like, by the minute you were born, you could see your death, and you could see the death of your parents, and the death of all of your loved ones. Like, I think you would need art as well. And also love, like, you could see your future spouse and all of that kind of stuff as well.
Well, but that's, I guess that's the way that we think of it, because we are still on this plane. And even Louise, like, once she has all this knowledge, she's still in that, in our, in an earthly mindset,
yes,
ultimately. But if you were so removed from space-time,
yeah,
I think art may be something that we need because we live just in the three dimensions. Like, it sounds like it should be, like, you should have more emotional, like, struggles or whatever.
Yeah.
Outside, if you know it all.
If you're living
and you need to express yourself. Yeah. But, like, if that's just your existence, is to know it all, to know exactly, yeah, how everything goes, I don't know that expression becomes necessary.
I think you would still.
To me, that's, I guess that's why I think, like, Abbott and Costello, when they come, like, they, mm, it, like, and why their ship is so, like you say, monochrome, no expression there, just, yeah, this is what it's for, and it does nothing else but be for that purpose. Because, like, I think that it, to know everything,
mm-hmm,
is to be a purely a scientist.
I think that's the opposite of science. I think to know everything is the opposite of science. I think science is the search, and to fail and to mess up and to find, and then, like, that kind of thing. I think to know everything is to be nothing. And
I mean, that's sort of the struggle, I think, that being one of these creatures would,
yeah,
would leave you with. Like, it would, I can't imagine, like, I don't want to know how it ends. Because to me, that's why I create things. Is, like,
yeah,
it's almost because I'm in this crisis of, where am I going?
Yeah.
I need, like, to create something to distract me from that. But if I knew what the end looked like,
yeah,
I don't know that I would feel the need to.
I feel like art,
get it out.
Art is, I think distraction is one of the reasons for art, but also, like, expression and, you know, communication, like, all of these other things. Like, I think that there, I think if you saw your entire life, you would still think artistically. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard to, I mean, it's yeah, it's one of those things that's literally impossible to,
yeah,
say.
Yeah, there's no way to,
but,
know.
But it's fascinating to think about.
Can we talk about how awesome the phone call was?
With, like, when she stole the phone and was talking,
yeah,
to Chang?
Yeah. That was my favorite moment of the movie.
Yeah?
Yeah. I loved that she had hacked the future and and told Chang, like, you need to show me your phone number and, like, tell me the last words that your wife, like, said to you. She just basically created a continuous loop. Like,
yeah.
It was great.
Well, like, here's the interesting, it's like, it of course opens up all of those questions.
Yeah.
Of, like, can you, like, when you affect the future from the past, like, did she always do that? Or did, like,
well, I think scientifically speaking, she would have had to have always done that.
Yeah. But so where did the idea come from? Is that, like,
it didn't come from anything. Yeah.
That was a great moment.
Yeah, I loved that moment.
I really loved the way that they, like, with the science that they introduce,
mm-hmm,
because when the aliens show up, and I like that they didn't try to, they obviously name the creatures as,
yeah,
like, the heptapods, but they just continued to say aliens throughout,
yeah,
the movie. Like, I almost, in real life, I almost wonder if we wouldn't use aliens because it sounds so ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, we would have to call them visitors or something like that, just to, like, make us not feel like, yeah, there were aliens in the sky.
Because we've, like, commercialized and cartooned aliens so much, I don't know.
Like, because when I think of aliens, I think of, like, Morbo.
Yeah.
And I have, like, my Morbo toy, or, like, Kang and Kodos is on the desk. Like, this is an alien.
Not
like, a true, like, interdimensional being.
Did you stay after the credits and watch the after credit sequence where Abbott and Costello play chopsticks on a giant piano? Did you stay for that?
I missed it. They play mine. They just played this interview with Amy Adams.
Oh no, they had Abbott and Costello playing chopsticks on a giant piano.
It's funny. I did really appreciate that they called them Abbott and Costello.
Yeah,
that's
great. Yeah,
like they're because they're speaking in circles.
Yes.
Exactly. It works.
Yeah, it works.
It works. But well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Like to me, that was the written language, and we have like a photo of it. It's like because it looks like it's such a simple idea that like because there are lots of cultures that use symbols instead of like individual
pictograms.
Letters.
Yeah.
And their language would be circular because they view time as a circle instead of a line. It perfectly makes sense.
Yeah.
I love the way they can like write.
Oh yeah,
in the
they
air.
Just like it was very squid like. They would just like emit ink and then do it. And then Amy Adams was able to do it as well, which was cool.
Yeah, sort of like she was able to like I guess use it to write in the because the air was so dense.
Yeah.
Like this is the like the alien design was so like so strong because like it wasn't just like a bipedal creature.
Yeah.
It was a completely I think it was Villeneuve who described them as jellyfish like.
Yeah.
Squid was the first thing I thought of.
Same.
Or maybe it was the writer of the short story. But either way, the idea came from jellyfish, not from anything else.
The way they disappeared into the mist reminded me a lot of Squid.
Yeah.
I'm sure
it started with jellyfish and then like once you build it out.
And that the weapon they're giving humanity is time.
That's fascinating in its own right. And I want to get to like the big like statement, like their reason for being here as its own thing. But just like because like when they introduce like they're introducing language in order to get well, I guess it's part of this conversation.
Yeah.
They're introducing language as a way to construct
your brain. Yeah.
And it's a theory that is real. That people have, like, the way she describes it, it's called linguistic relativity.
Yeah.
Or the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is like, when I was doing research, that's what it's called.
It is.
And it's basically language as the way we view our world.
Yeah.
Like, you could change, if you were hardwired to speak a different language, that you would have a different view of society.
Yeah. I mean, just if words meant different things, it would change how you would feel about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. And that's one of the little issues I have with the movie is it's real convenient that a lexicographer is the one who is working on this, like a person who like would be the person who gets the weapon. Like it's very convenient. All of that lines up.
I think the idea, I think it, to me, it worked only because like it wasn't the one spaceship. Where they were doing this, like if it had just been one and she was like the person they happened to call upon for it was because like there were 12 and of them only she and like so that's why we're following her of like all of these people but like there were 11 other teams that we could have been
it still
with.
Feels super convenient that the ultimate weapon at the end of it was a language and we happen to have a lexicographer who is there who gets the ultimate weapon and saves the world from firing on these chips.
Yeah. I mean, it's
you need it for the movie.
Yeah. But I guess to me, like the pieces that got her there all made sense because like you're trying to communicate, and so you go to a translation specialist.
Yeah. No, I get all those pieces. Yeah. I'm just saying that the ultimate MacGuffin happens to be the thing that she is a specialist in.
Yeah.
Like Ripley is just like some woman working on a space truck. Like, she isn't like some, like, and like the thing that
I'm working on this space truck, but I've also got degrees in biolinguistics biology.
Or just like, I know how to light, make flamethrowers out of this ship. it's just a different story. It's a very small issue. Like, it's, you need it for this movie to work.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you don't have it, there is no movie. It was just like one of those things in the back of my mind. I was like, oh, it's very convenient. Like,
yeah.
But at the same time, it pays off so well that I don't care.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. There's like other ways. Like, there's a lot of people like out there that don't believe that this is true, that we are hardwired this way. There's a lot of science fiction that deals with it, and I personally think that it makes. I'm not a linguistics specialist. I can't speak to the science of it, like, other than what I've read. But it stands to reason for me. Like 1984, George Orwell talks about it, and that's like sort of the example that makes me believe this really, not to the extreme of like I can see outside of space time, but that it can change your worldview, because it, like Newspeak in 1984. Is a language where they remove things like the stuff that would make you think like an individual. If you never teach people the concept of free will they ever think of it as a thing that exists?
Yeah, well, and I mean, like, I think it was Stanford did a study in the 90s where they had like a group of people, and they told them that for X amount of time, anytime you want to say something is good or positive or something like that, even though you're feeling it, say you hate it. And just hate means good to you. So whenever you say like, oh, I love that movie, that was great, I hated that movie, it was hate. And those people, like, after the study were like angrier and had high blood pressure and all of that kind of stuff just by changing the words that they used.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one study that was done. It's not definitive proof, but it definitely is one of those things where the language you use represents who you are.
Yeah.
And if you change your language, you can change who you are.
It's very possible. Like, obviously, we're not going to prove it sitting here.
No.
But I find it.
No, let's have a 30-hour podcast. Let's get into this.
We're gonna bring in other people to do a scientific study within the room.
Computer, we're gonna need some Chinese food. It's gonna be a while,
but it has to be in takeout containers.
Yep, and one of us has a visor. If we could just get an ashtray full of cigarettes now.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, the big theme at the end of it is like the idea of like time and a predictable future.
Yes.
Would you want to know?
No.
You wouldn't want to, like, study this language and then gain that ability.
I personally would not, no.
I thought that, like, her view on it was so fascinating. And, like, poetic in a way that you're just like, I take a step back. Because she, like, still goes through all of those motions, like, that she knows is going to happen. Like, she doesn't spare herself the pain that she knows is coming.
And when she tells Ian about it, he leaves her. And so she made the wrong move.
Because not everyone is... Not everyone would want to know.
No.
And Ian didn't.
No.
To know that your daughter
is going to die very soon...
And to know, and for her to know that, like, her marriage was gonna
fail, yeah.
But she still went into it because of the moments that were there before it.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I guess that's the dangerous thing is, yes, she's always, her daughter has always been dead, but her daughter has always been alive as well. And I guess with, like, the human brain, the way it works, like, I would think you would just exist in those moments where she's always alive. Like, you would just, like, that's what you would focus on.
Yeah. While we're talking about this, I think it's relevant to ask a question that we always ask, and we'll get back into, so that we can talk about like the aliens and their reason for being here.
Yeah.
But we got to ask, what would Neil deGrasse Tyson say? And this week we know very definitively, or mostly definitively, what he would say about this movie. Because we have a video clip that Business Insider did with him talking about Interstellar, which followed very similar concepts. So if we roll this, then you'll know what he thinks about all the themes and stuff at play here.
Hey, Neil, what would you say?
If you go to a higher dimension, it's not unrealistic to think that you step out of the time dimension, and now you look at time as though we look at space. So very... questions that we have, very statements that we make about our lives, make no sense in that higher coordinate system. You can ask, when was I born? Well, you're always born. When did I go to college? You're always going to college. When did I die? You're always dying. And so if your whole timeline is laid out in front of you, then you have access to it. And you can jump in at any point, relive it. We don't know yet if you can interfere with events that, quote, have already happened. If your whole timeline is just already there, what does it mean to jump into it and then change something if it's already there? So these are fascinating questions that make great fodder for science fiction.
Zach, I know that you're a member of the tribe, and that idea of you were always there in Passover, it's like the main idea is you were always in Egypt. You are in Egypt. You always will be in Egypt.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's an interesting kind of, number one, that people that old had that big concept. And number two, like, I think it's kind of relative to like this. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Moses was living outside the space.
Yeah, maybe that guy Moses knew what he was doing.
But that idea, like of stepping, the Tyson talks about there, where you can step back from time, and like, because I think that's the whole thing, is like Louise could, like the way she talks about at the beginning, like memories, like just accessing it in. Like as she wants to, like she could be reliving all of those moments, not just through. Like at that point, it's not what is a memory.
Yeah,
it's just her accessing different parts of her life.
Yeah, I think if this ever happened, I don't know what. Like I don't know what you would become. Like you would just be someone watching your Netflix queue throughout. Eternity, because you'd never die, because you were already dead, and you'd never be born. You were always alive. You'd just be there watching the Netflix queue of your life.
There's different categories. Yeah. Embarrassing moments.
Exactly.
Proud things.
Romantic comedy.
Memories you don't want to access.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Put in a playlist just to haunt you.
Yeah, exactly. You'd just be there flicking through it for the rest of your life.
That's the one that Netflix auto plays.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like,
no, cancel.
I didn't select that.
I mean, you'd just be doing that until infinity.
Yeah.
Like, you'd just be going through, you know, you'd watch the same episode of the IT Crowd 300 times.
But they do still die. Like, that's the, so the creatures, like the heptapods, like, Abbott dies.
He dies, but only in Amy Adams' timescape. In Abbott's timescape, he's always been dead. And he's always been alive.
So do you think that the creatures exist?
If you live,
do they exist outside the physical realm entirely, and they just entered it to talk to us?
Well, based off what Neil deGrasse, if we're going off of what Neil deGrasse Tyson said, then yeah, you could just Netflix around. I'm going to say Netflix because I think it's an interesting idea. You could just queue around, and so you, like you said, you've always been dead. You can't die if you're already always dead.
Yeah.
And you can't be alive if you've always been born as well. It's like this weird kind of...
I guess it implies... Sorry.
I was just saying, it's just the weird kind of... It's a different existence than we know, like, how it works.
I guess it implies a soul, in a sense. That, like Abbott and Costello and now Louise, like, that they... If they have, like, their soul, just for lack of a better term...
Yeah.
It can exist inside their physical body, and when in the physical body, it follows the straight line version of time.
Yeah.
But as soon as, but like, it, basically what the, this movie is saying is like accessing this language, and then she's teaching classes on how to, she's like helping people to like, to teach it, and then maybe be able, maybe somebody else can access it the same way if they truly understand the language, that they would then be able to step outside of their body into a part of a dimension or a part of the universe that doesn't have a physical realm. It doesn't exist in three dimensions. It exists only in the fourth dimension.
Fourth and fifth, yeah.
Yeah. And can and looks at the universe in its own way. Just the way that you think of ultraviolet light. We can't see ultraviolet light, but it is there.
Yeah.
This other dimension is there, but it's just she can access it now in a different plane.
Yeah, well, it'd be the same as like if we were in the two dimensions and we saw a human, like they would, it would just be a flat representation of them. But as soon as you get to the third dimension, now you can see like, oh, they've got two eyes, they've got all that stuff. Like you would step out and you would see time in, like we're right now seeing time in only one way, which is moving forward. But we know that at least scientifically speaking, that's incorrect. Time just is. There is no forward and backward. There's only just time.
Yeah.
So you would have to be able to step back and see the full three-dimensional image of time itself.
Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of, like, just, like, to get into the back into the movie.
Yeah, sure.
I love the sociopolitical view of everything.
It was really cool.
You have, like, people that are scared, and eventually it drives a few of the people who are camped under the ship, mm-hmm. the military, to be like, no, I have to take this into my own hands and blow them up.
Yeah.
Doesn't cause, I thought the aliens might come with a backlash at that point, so they just move up the timetable.
Yeah.
Basically. And, like,
I thought that was really interesting that they had, like, basically military people watching TV and seeing pundits, and, like, that was making them feel like they had to shoot at them and, like, blow them up.
Yeah. And, like, it only took a couple, because you only needed, like, one or two people to have who had access to all of those things, and then recruited a person that would let them take it and go, and they're already there.
Yeah.
And the people who have been up there are probably just is probably the are probably among the most scared.
Yeah,
for sure. They don't understand any more than anyone else.
I don't know about you, but I thought that there was going to be a twist that one of the reasons why they couldn't talk to the aliens, or like they weren't being able to communicate with them, is because the aliens were talking to two different species. Because there was a canary in there as well, and it was peeping all the time.
Yeah.
And I was thinking maybe the aliens, aliens are not only getting human speech, but at the same time they're getting canary speech as well. And like that canary is like saying, I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared, over and over again. And like so that Abbott and Costello were having to try and learn two different languages at the same time.
Oh man.
Because like they don't know that the canary isn't the person in charge. Like they don't know anything. Like,
yeah. I mean their way of communicating like you're gonna die is to be like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
We're all just like, oh my god, look behind you. They didn't even anyway. The big drop before we have to wrap up that I want to make sure that we can discuss for like 2 minutes is basically the whole reason that they're here, like what is your purpose is the big question. They say in 3,000 years they're going to need humanity's help. So they needed them to have access to time as a weapon. I don't know what that implies. Like there's – all right. So real quick as we wrap up, like theories on what that could imply.
I have no idea.
Like the only thing I think is like a different alien race that is coming to attack one or both of the home worlds of these creatures. Or it could be, maybe it's like the next level of environmentalism. Like essentially like what if like by accessing the time continuum like this, like it's tearing apart and like they're going to need, and it's going to hit a focal point in 3,000 years, time.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen too much Doctor Who, but I was like thinking maybe time ends in 3,000 years and they need humanity's help to keep it going.
Like there's a black spot in... They're like we can't see further than this. Like no creature amongst the heptapods can see beyond this point in time. So something is wrong, and we need more creatures, more races. Who knows how many other races they've given this knowledge to?
Yeah.
We need more races and more beings who can help us fix with this whatever knowledge. Problem yeah. is coming. We are preparing for it.
Yeah.
So they're just going through time to prepare different people.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. It is one of the, like, I would say it for me, that was a little bit of a fault. The wideness of that question.
Yeah.
Like, there's only two faults in the whole movie for me. Hmm. And it's like, I get why that had to be there, because there had to be a justification for them coming to teach us.
Yeah.
But I almost could have done it with, like, without a justification of them just, like,
yeah, they just teaching. Wanted to be benevolent.
But I don't know that general audiences would have accepted it that
yeah.
way. And there's one line at the end that was when Jeremy Renner turns to him, the most important thing wasn't meeting them, it was meeting you. And I was, oh, come on, Jeremy Renner. If it hadn't been at the end, it wouldn't have stuck out so much.
Yeah.
But it was like the big climax moment for them. And it was just
the cheesiest thing.
It's so cheesy.
It was freaking aliens, dude. No way.
Like, you're a physicist. You talk about how he had his neck craned up at the sky. Like, that's great. You met a really awesome lady. You guys are going to have a great time together for a certain amount of years. But come on, man. Or at least acknowledge the cheesiness of the line you've just laid down.
Yeah.
Like, if he had owned it.
That's the thing. Amy Adams exists out of time. She's going to hear that line for infinity.
Ooh. Ugh.
Yeah.
And, like, people are asking, like, how did he, like, make his move? She's like, you know, I don't want to tell that story.
Oh, so not only that, she has to tell that story infinite amount of times.
Think about how many times you ever had to tell, like, all your family, like, yeah. Oh, how'd you guys meet when you're dating somebody? Tell that forever.
Tell it's that not story a good forever. Pickup yeah, line.
All right. So, lastly, before, the last piece of the show, I want to give a shout out to two people who gave us a sci-fi moment of the week.
Oh, yeah. The sci-fi moment of the week.
This movie is by far my sci-fi moment of the week. Like, I can't even remember what else I was doing.
Yep. Same here.
Chill Cat.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Chill Cat, you're the best.
It's the only one that sent us in one. And we missed Captain Travis last week, but since it was the next week, I felt like we were too late, so I apologize.
Yeah.
Chill Cat says, Trump's win confirms that the Earth has secretly moved to the upside down.
That's a possibility, Chill Cat.
Yeah, it's very, very much real. And I want to thank, like, Ukla67, who said, on iTunes, gave us an iTunes review.
Nice.
Enjoy the show. Love the idea of sci-fi and fantasy mix. The hosts are nerds. It's right up my alley. And if you guys haven't already, be sure to go into iTunes and hit us with a review. It helps raise the visibility of this show.
It does.
So that more people can find it. Because we want to make this as big a show as we can, because it helps us get fun guests on the show. If you watch other shows on Popcorn Talk or AfterBuzz TV, we've gotten some amazing guests. And getting those reviews and getting the podcast more seen is the way that we can pull that off.
Yeah.
So it really makes a difference. So just head on to iTunes, search for Sci-Fi Weekly. And even if you're watching on YouTube, hit us there. Or hit us with a thumbs up on the YouTube.
Please do.
All right, until next week, where we are going to, I don't care if this is science or not, we're talking about Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. It's going to be a Harry Potter spectacular with me, Jesse, and Emma Fife. Huh. Our friend Emma Fife is going to stop by to talk some Potter with us.
Sure.
So until then, Jesse Klein, where can everyone find you?
Oh, yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. I also do the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast at AfterBuzz with Zach over here. My sketch team Haymakers doing comedy. It's fun. Enjoy.
And you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson. A whole bunch of stuff coming up after the new year here at AfterBuzz and Popcorn Talk. Check out Marvel Movie News on Tuesdays. We did the Doctor Strange review last week, and there's a whole bunch more coming, guys. Until next week, this has been Sci-Fi Weekly, where we're just one lab coat away from being real scientists.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.